we've been on the front line of what's normally called anymore the GMO debates. And lately, I think there's been a lot of interest in the salmon issue. And you've been watching it very closely, been very involved with it. But I wonder if you might share your perspective of what this means, where we finally are with the FDA's approval, and where we find ourselves today, and you know, what your impressions are of the issue at this stage.
Breeding, so passing on that trait to the next generation, which then I passed on blue eyes to my children.
said before that that's nearly impossible, if not impossible.
Good. Just before we even talk about that fish, wild Pacific salmon and Atlantic salmon are different genus. They're in different genus in the same way that dogs and cats are in different genus, and they cannot interbreed. So, irrespective of the genetic modification, Pacific salmon and Atlantic salmon are not sexually compatible. They cannot interbreed. So that's just a given. What also for this particular application is these fish are both female, haploid, which makes them sterile, and land contained in tanks in the highlands of Panama, which has multiple physical containment that prevents them getting out into the ocean. And so, I'm not sure what else a company could do other than raising them on Mars that could preclude the interbreeding of these fish with wild populations. And so, I think the company has taken the appropriate risk mitigation measures and has gone through a rigorous regulatory process. And the fact that it still has political interference suggests to me that this technology is just basically a non-starter. And it's really a technology that could be used in both our plant and animal production systems to produce products that I think the public would be supportive of. And as I mentioned earlier, disease resistance is a real problem. Disease is a real problem. And to be able to use this technology to help with that in the public breeding program is more or less prohibited when we've got this type of political interference with the use of this one breeding method. We've got 20 years of experience with the breeding method, and there haven't been any breeding associated with it. At some stage, we have to let the data inform our regulatory decisions and our attitude to it. And so, you know what? After 20 years, I think that we can conclude that the science suggests that there's nothing unique going on here, and that we can actually treat it the same way we do conventional breeding, which is basically not subject to any type of regulation. I mean, all food that comes to the market has to be safe, that's a given. But we don't regulate plant and animal breeding other than this one breeding method.
Before you throw the towel in, though, I mean, you were saying that the technology may not go anyplace. But basically, the main objection right now just seems to be on labeling. And at the end of the day, if it's labeled, so what? To the people that care, they'll avoid it. But for the many people that may not care, they've had the opportunity to know, and then they'll probably buy it anyway.
Yeah, well, I think the labeling discussion, I guess, I think if it's going to be labeled, there should be some food safety concern associated with it, because I might be interested in other breeding methods that are used in breeding, like, I don't know, radiation eudogenesis or artificial insemination. And why do we want this one breeding method labeled and not all of the other breeding methods? It kind of doesn't make much logical sense. But there is a new technology that we introduced called genome editing, where we're actually just tweaking the genome or the genetics of the animal within its own DNA, not introducing a new gene. And there's new technologies with things like CRISPR and TALEN. And I think that that's really a new, more advanced technique that they have been CRISPR and TALEN. So they're basically approaches where we can go in with what are called nucleases and make targeted edits in the genome. So the same way a word processor can go in and you can search for the word wind and make it into wine, we can go in and we can maybe turn off a gene that we don't want expressed. And so, for example, we have some cows at UC Davis where we've gone in and we've turned off the gene that grows horns. And normally, dairy cattle have their horns removed mechanically by burning them off. And basically, we've gone in and genetically said, don't grow horns, just like Angus beef cattle, don't grow horns. And I think that technique maybe has some interesting potential uses and doesn't involve bringing in a gene from another species, which seems to be a lot of what the public concern is around genetic engineering, that you're bringing in a gene from Atlantic or Pacific salmon into Atlantic salmon here, which is basically making targeted edits in the genome of an individual, which is just precision breeding for me as a breeder, and we can do it in a very precise way. And I think that technology has really got the public sector breeders excited, because we think that this might be a way to do things like disease-resistant plants and animals that won't be
concern that got on the wrong side, and certainly from your perspective, that they got on the wrong side on the concern about salmon, for example. But the simple technology, it comes to avoid the mistakes, maybe, that we've gone through with agriculture, with the public reaction to GMO.
Well, I mean, I think I like to think that this technology can be used for things that really align with a lot of the core values of our consumers. And so our consumers are concerned about animal welfare, concerned about animal disease, concerned about the use of antibiotics. And so what if I could actually use this technology to produce animals that don't get sick, for example, and don't need to be treated with antibiotics, and have a lower environmental impact as a result of the fact that they're not sick? And I think that, you know, as a mother myself, I know what I'm interested in is ensuring the technology that we use in agricultural production systems has a minimal environmental footprint to produce the food we need for the coming generations. And I see that these technologies actually align beautifully with sustainability interests that the general population has in terms of reducing environmental impact and also things like animal welfare. And so I think there are some common shared values that these technologies can address, and I really think that that's perhaps the approach to take. In addressing these technologies, the target traits that we have, maybe the consumer could more easily understand why you might want to breed disease-resistant animals in a way that perhaps they weren't comprehending why you might want to have Roundup-ready crops, for example. So I think there are different examples, and also it's a lot of public sector development, that the technology was developed by the public sector, and it's public sector breeders, and so you kind of remove that large multinational corporation concern from the equation. And really, the public sector are the breeders that have been developing herds of animals for humanity for many years. And so I think that there's perhaps, if you take away that profit motive and you take away business practices of large multinational companies, and you take away the use of chemicals by rather breeding disease-resistant types of animals, then we have a different discussion around this breeding method than we did perhaps with genetic engineering.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're getting to an optimistic point here, because you're identifying some ways that this might go forward, and there's uses of technology that can bring people together. That makes me wonder whether back when this whole audience started with GMO, we ended up having some high-profile companies that became controversial that said that genetically modification was going to solve all these problems. But when the critics said,